Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Let's just have a few minutes of meditation. We're living in a very stressful time. You need to stay in touch with serenity. You need to know how to breathe properly so that you stay as relaxed as is possible. And there's a whole science to breathing and why you inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth, the way you oxygenate yourself. In the scriptures, the word spirit and breath are used interchangeably. In the Hebrew, it's ruach, and in the Greek, it's pneuma. Jesus was a meditator. Meditation is not exclusive to Buddhism or Hinduism. All the great masters meditated. Your second one this morning isn't good, BJ. You never get too much meditation. Brenda, let's do this. I need Brenda. Turn on your camera and lead us in some Tai Chi. Hey, Octavia. Those of you that are mastering this art, you'll get there in about three breaths, but let's all do it together. Let's inhale. Hold it. Exhale. I start feeling relaxation on my first intentional breath. The sun's feeling good. Thank you, son. Thank you, Wynn. Thank you. I really appreciate the cooperation. Thank you. Inhale. Exhale. You don't have to sit in a lotus position, but just sit up straight. Get your spinal column in a zone where you can flow. You don't have to do a mudra, but there's a reason. The reason why in the charismatic Pentecostal churches we raised our hands, or there's different ways you did your hands that without people knowing it, it affected the way they received, and there's a science behind it. So doing this, it's not unchristian to do it. It's just an energy point. You can Google it and find out more than I can tell you right now. But let's breathe. Hold it. Exhale. Inhale. Hold it. Exhale. Feel the tension leaving your shoulders, leaving your neck, leaving your spinal column. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Become conscious of your breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. Through the nose. Exhale. Those of you that are listening to this on the podcast and you can't see me, I'm just breathing in. Inhale through the nose. Hey, Miss Leon. Hey, Rachel. Exhale through the mouth. Breathe in. Breathe out. Hey, Ernie. Good morning to both of you, Leona and Ernie. Inhale. Exhale. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That's some good stuff. And now while we're in meditation mode, while we create this space of serenity and focus and intention, we release energy through the words of our mouth. We make the I am affirmations. I am, I am, I am, I am, I am light, I am health, I am love, I am strength, I am spirit. I am eternal. Say these things out loud. The water's going to put you to sleep. All right. Okay, babe. You can listen to it later. Have a nap. It'll be archived. I am joy. I am laughter. I am peace of mind. I am wellness. And you'll be over under your blanket. See, can you hear me? Hello, hello, hello. Okay, everybody's saying they can't hear me, and I don't know. I may have to start over. Okay, you can't hear me. I get it. Let's see. Hey, Chelsea Shack. Okay, now you hear me? Okay, I don't know. I was just hearing beautiful music. All right, you can hear me. You can hear me. All right, y'all were freaking out there for a minute. What kind of music was it? I was hearing meditation music. Hey, Tony. All right. Well, I'm still experimenting with the meditation music, but at least we got. What did we get? Oh, it's 11:11. We got about 11 minutes of. Hey, Melinda. Hey, Ray. You can hear me? Okay. So you weren't hearing anything I was saying. All right, you weren't hearing anything I was saying about meditation. All right, well, hey Dave, well maybe that's not going to work. Okay, well maybe it's time for me to teach anyway. Okay, some people are still saying they can't. I don't know. It sounded like a truck horn, huh? That's bizarre. All right. Sin got caught up. Siri got caught up in the meditation. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. It was an epic deep sound. I like your positive spin on it, too. All right. You can hear me. It was just for a few seconds. I don't know what that was. I didn't hear it. I was just hearing beautiful music, but okay. Chelsea, just about a minute ago. Okay. You lost me at the I am. Okay. All right. Maybe the energy on the I ams is too strong. Log off and log back on. Okay. Okay. Back. The last thing was I am wellness. All right. I am wellness. I am wholeness. I am strength. I am peace. I am unity. I am truth. I am openness. I am flow. I am attraction. I am faith. I am prayer. I am meditation. Okay, I get it. It was loud music. I understand. I heard it. I don't think it's playing now. If it still is, log back on, because I'm not hearing it. I am movement. I am progression. I am knowledge. I am wisdom. I am. Yes, Rhonda, I am one with the universe. Absolutely. I am justice. That's a good one. I like it. I am alive. That's good, Constance. I am worthy. Yes, that one's huge. I am worthy. Absolutely. Say these things out loud. I am worthy. I am worthiness. I am worth. Yeah, absolutely. I am forgiveness. Good one. Good one. Good one. Y'all are all in the zone. Glad that whatever the crazy music was apparently woke y'all up. So it's all good. All right. In Philippians, I am peace. Yes, absolutely. I am ready. That's a good one. Each one of the churches that Paul wrote to, Wynn, thank you for just settling down. Just give me a few minutes, please. Thank you. Just calm down. Mainly so everybody can hear. I am deserving. That's a good one. Each of the letters that Paul wrote to the churches in Asia Minor, you can tell by the tone of the letter reveals a lot about that church. Like, the Corinthian church was just, I mean, they were wackadoodles. And, most of 1 Corinthians is a rebuke to them. 2 Corinthians is, a lot of it is a retraction nearly of the initial rebuke. Paul wrote, Galatians, and he was furious when he wrote it, because the Galatians were his pride and joy about not being legalistic, and yet they went under the spell of someone who was a legalist, and he accused them of being bewitched. One church we don't know that much about, and I think sometimes if you didn't know a lot about the church, it's probably a good sign. It was like they probably were low maintenance. And the Philippian church was, I think, that was the case with them. There's only four chapters in what we call the book of Philippians. There was a French priest years after the Council of Nicaea who divided the books of the Bible up into chapters and verses. They originally were not written that way. And the Philippian church basically is a thank you letter for an offering. I mean, Paul was supported by the financial offerings of the churches that he covered. Jesus even took offerings. I mean, Judas was his accountant. He was responsible for the money. But so there was a man named Epaphroditus who brought an offering to Paul, not once but twice. And apparently the second offering was pretty impressive. I mean, Paul was blown away at their generosity. And I have found in my own life, usually the people who give the most require the least. Like the people in my life who have given the most abundantly to me are usually the ones that I don't ever remember doing a counseling appointment with them. It's like they're just on a different wavelength. Givers are just they're just different the way they see the world. The Philippian church was a giving church. And so he was basically all of Philippians is a thank you letter to them. And there's some classic lines in there, some really great verses. Like Philippians 1:8 is, he who began a good work in you will continue to perform it. Philippians Philippians 3 is the whole thing about forgetting those things which are behind and pressing on the mark for the prize of the high calling. I mean, it's some beautiful writing. Some of Paul's letters, there's a lot of dispute about who actually wrote it. This one, generally, scholars agree that he wrote it. But chapter 4 it's really got some classic verses in there. Verse 6 of chapter 4 is, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, make your request known to God. It's a great idea about how to pray in gratitude, believe you receive when you pray. And, hey, could that sun come back out? That'd be awesome. In all due respect, clouds, could you just move around? Let me have a little sunlight. But, and thank you, by the way, thank you. Verse 13 is the one that you hear most. It's, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And it's when he was talking about he had learned how to be poor and rich. He'd learned how to be full and empty. And he said he didn't learn it by revelation. He learned it just by the school of hard knocks. And it's in that context that he said, he says, I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. And then in verse 13, he says, well, what I figured out is I can handle anything. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And then down in verse 19, he says, it's where he's saying, thank you for your gift. I appreciate it. And he said, but I'm already rich. He said, I just want you to know you had more need to give than I had to receive. The wind's blowing. Oh, is it Dr. A? Is it amazing? Okay, good. But main thing, I want you to be able to hear me up over the wind. It's where he says, you had more need to give than I did to receive, that fruit might abound to your account. And he says, I like this. There you go. He says, but my God shall supply all of your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. The verse that most stands out to me, however, in Philippians is verse 8. It's where he says, he begins the verse by saying, finally, my brethren. Paul had a particular writing style. After he had written these very lengthy epistles, he would begin to wrap it up and he would usually say, finally, my brethren. And whatever he said after finally my brethren tended to be the most important thing. It was kind of like when he would say finally my brethren, and he wrote to brethren because women weren't allowed to read at this time. But he said when he would say finally my brethren, basically what he was saying is, I said all that to say this. Like everything I've said up to now was for this reason. And so in verse 8 he says, finally my brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of a good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. And there's several different translations that really bring out the texture of that writing. The Message Bible has a beautiful interpretation of it. But basically, I'm assuming y'all are still hearing me, right? Basically, somebody send a heart or something. Let me know. I'm not just talking into my own image here. Okay, there's some. All right, I got you. Thank you. Thanks for the hearts. All right. I'm not being insecure. I just need to know y'all. I still have a connection with you. So I know basically it means you're listening when you stop. But okay, got it. Just listen. So, basically, you could kind of sum up all of the thought of Philippians really in just this one line. Finally, my brethren, whatever is true, think about that. Basically, that's what he said all that to say. Just think about what's true. Don't think about what's false. Don't think about what's a lie. And this morning, I was just reading some articles when I got up. I was reading some, like, Psychology Today and some of these psych magazines about why is it easier for people to believe a lie than to believe truth? It requires more cognitive effort. Sorry. It requires more Come on, Wynn, work with me here. I don't know. I can try it. I'm going to move up a little bit. Maybe if I'm beside this wall, it'll block a little bit of it. Hopefully that's better. The area of the roof I'm on, you have, there's certain pavers you have to walk on. Other areas you're not allowed to because it damages the roof. So I'm having to stay. I just have limited area on this side where I can stand. Maybe that's better. Actually, the other thing I'm going to do, hang on. I think it will be better if I just come in. Hang on. If I just come under here, I think that may be better because I'm blocking it off. Okay. Maybe that's going to be better. Okay. Is it better? Good. Yay. So, basically I was reading this morning about, I'm in the wind. Yes, ma'am. Basically, I was reading these articles today about why is it that I'm just fascinated with this idea of why people embrace lies easier than truth. I mean, I'm curious about it in the religious world. I'm certainly curious about it in the political world, especially now. I'm fascinated in my own journey. Like, what are the things in my life that affected me negatively that it just turned out weren't true? Rutherford posted something last week, really resonated with me. He said, I found out the only enemy I had was the person I was pretending to be. I thought, wow, that's some deep stuff. And, you know, in years past, I've taught about how, when Copernicus, being mobile, yes. When Copernicus began to prove in his day that the Earth was not the center of the universe, people in the ancient world not only believed that the Earth was flat, they believed that the Earth was stationary and that the universe revolved around the Earth. And a lot of that they based on the Bible, because the Bible said from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same, the Lord's name is to be praised. So people thought that the sun actually moved. They didn't have any idea that the Earth was round and that it was revolving and rotating and all that sort of thing. And then Galileo, years later, he even expanded on that. And in both cases, the Catholic Church wanted to put them to death because they felt like their changing of people's perception was demonic. And, you know, it's interesting, whatever demons actually were in the Gospels, and I have my own feeling about that I won't get into right now, but it's interesting to me that even when Jesus would talk about demons, he would talk about, one thing I noticed, they would always be resistant to change. Like in one case he says, when the demon goes out of a man, he roams through dry places, and then he can't find a lodging, so he says, I'm going to go back to my home, and he brings seven demons worse than himself. And what was interesting is that the demon didn't want to explore new territory. The demon didn't want to change. The demon always wanted to go back to familiarity. And even in the story of the man at Gadara, remember when the demons spoke, and they said, my name is Legion, for we are many. And when Jesus told them to come out, they said, don't send us out of this country. Let us go into the pigs. So one thing that you can see is that whatever is actually demonic, I don't actually believe they are disembodied spirits. I think your demons are wrong thoughts, wrong, you know, things that you've embraced in your life that have become your reality that are against them. They exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. And they are resistant to change. That's why the scripture would use phrases like strongholds, a thing that holds people and keeps them from moving forward, keeps them from embracing the truth. And I've read in historical accounts that after the culture at large finally admitted, like, okay, the earth is not the center of the universe and the sun is stationary and there's a solar system and the earth is in a orbital path around the sun, even after it was just proven beyond a doubt that that was the truth, it so affected their perception that it says that the world fell into something called the post-Copernican depression. It's like what the truth felt so unfamiliar to them that it affected them negatively in an emotional way. It's kind of like a person finding out when they're an adult that they were adopted and never knew it, and it sort of just shifts their whole self-perception. That's why if you adopt a child, it's just better to go ahead and tell them the truth as they grow up, because it's very likely that at some point they're going to find out the truth about how they were born. And if they're believing one thing about themselves and find out something else, it really can affect people in profound ways, because we go through life having a particular worldview, embracing a certain truth, and it's very difficult to let those false perceptions go or depart with illusions. I never watched Dr. Phil, but somehow I ended up over there watching it. This has been probably a couple of years ago. And there are. I'll get to that in a moment. But there was a woman, you know, I think the term is catfish, like when somebody goes after somebody online and makes them think they're somebody else. And a lot of these elderly people, especially elderly women, and I don't mean that in a sexist way, I'm just saying there's a lot of older women, widows, that, you know, women who are lonely, who get taken by somebody online that they believe is real, and they're just being catfished. And there was this woman, they had her on there, very, you could tell, intelligent woman, well-dressed. You could tell she had lived a quality life. Her adult children were on there because over like a 2 or 3 year period, this man had had approached her from online, found her online. I don't know if she'd been on some dating site or something, but anyway, he had proposed to her and told her that he was going to come to the United States and marry her, and she had given him thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Like, she had just depleted her entire savings because this guy would romance her and tell her that you know, he was in love with her and he was the woman of her dreams. And her children were saying, "Mom, this guy's not real." You know, Dr. Phil said, "Have you ever met him?" "No, I've never met him." But she had a reason. No matter what they asked, she had a reason. Well, he was going to come, but then the government got involved and affected it. He couldn't get his papers. It was just like this string of lies. You can tell this woman's just been deceived. So Dr. Phil does this thing where they trace the guy's call and find out it's some guy, I think in Nigeria or somewhere, that's sitting in a internet cafe, and he's playing this on like 30 different American women at once, and he's just making incredible amounts of money. These women who want to believe that there's this younger man who's a Prince Charming, they've just depleted all of their savings. And so Dr. Phil showed this woman with her children. He said, "I'm going to show you beyond a shadow of a doubt, this man's not real. He does not exist. He's not coming to America. He's not going to marry you. There is the name's not real." They even showed that the address he was using wasn't real. None of it was real. All of it was a lie. And I watched this woman's reaction to it. again, very well-dressed, well-coiffed, intelligent woman. And she said, she still said, I know none of y'all believe it, but I know he's real. And I know he's going to come and marry me. And y'all are all going to feel really foolish when it happens. And you could just see her kids are looking at her like, what the hell has happened to you? Now, I know there's something to be said for, like, if Noah really spent 125 years building the ark, there's something to be said for believing something that nobody's ever seen evidence of, and finally it does happen. So I get that whole thing. I'm not talking about standing in faith for something that's, thank you, son. That was awesome. Yeah, I feel it. I feel it in the back of my neck. Whew. And it's amazing to see this woman who, I mean, there was nothing left to stand on. She saw the man's not real, the name's not real, the address isn't real, this is totally a scam. And she still said, I know, but I just believe he's real. Now, it's one thing if you want to have fantasies and, you know, that kind of thing that are harmless. It's another thing when they're affecting your life negatively. And I'm just fascinated with that whole thing about how the human brain can believe a lie. You know, in this election, it's been proven, and yes, I'm going to talk about it. I have to talk about it. It's been proven over and over and over and over again. One thing I said earlier this week, there's been 50 lawsuits brought. It's actually been closer to 100. Most of them by conservative Republican judges who have said, even the Supreme Court, who have just thrown these cases out over and over and over and over and over again. There is no evidence whatsoever that there was voter fraud. It's not real. I'm not saying that there's not a little something here or there, something slips through the cracks, but every year it's probably out of 350 million people, it's like less than 10. It's like there's no, as far as there being this mass thing of thousands of ballots being thrown away, that's never happened. It's completely a lie made up by one man. And now you look at the danger of it, like, wow. I'm not saying that if he would just tell the truth, it would stop white supremacy, but it probably would have prevented what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, because most of those people were fired up by hearing this lie told to them over and over and over and over and over again, and they've regurgitated that lie back and forth to each other on social media, and they believe it so much now that when you show them, when their own people from their own party, like here in Georgia, the Republicans who were in charge of voting were saying, we voted for Donald Trump. We gave money to his campaign. Why would we be trying to pull off something to help Joe Biden get elected? And they believe the lie so much that they're willing to do what they did. And as I've said earlier in one of my videos, you know, there's some things that I look at, that happen and I have an initial reaction to them. And then when I see more and more information on it, I think, oh, maybe that wasn't that bad, and maybe I overreacted to it. This thing that happened on January 6th is just the opposite. The more I see that comes out about it, the more horrible it is. It's like, oh my God. I mean, they showed this week how Vice President Pence was just a few hundred feet away from where they were. The people who were looking for him saying, hang Mike Pence, he was in there hiding in an office with his family. I mean, that's some scary stuff. And it's all based, I know white supremacy existed before Donald Trump got into office. He just made it more acceptable and let people come out of the shadows. But for the most part, the whole thing is built on this one lie that, of course, in these next 3 days, he'll never say it. But if he would just say, look, I need to tell you something. There's no voter fraud. The election wasn't stolen. Please, everybody, calm down. the, you know, the rhetoric, and, you know, it would do so much to rehabilitate his image, and it wouldn't change a lot of people, because there's a lot of people, when you believe for a lie for a long time, it so affects your brain chemistry that if he were to have a thing where he did a speech where he said it, even today, people who believe the lie would say, oh, well, they're making him say that. And they would, you know, a lot of these people that believe the QAnon stuff that's totally based on lies, they think that there's codes in the stuff that he says. Like when he said this, but he really meant this. And it's just when you think it can't get any more insane, it gets more and more insane. And it's all just based on this one major lie. It's not just about the election, but it's this idea that the other people, the black people, the brown people, the people from Mexico, the caravans, they're coming to steal your country, your reality. None of it's real, but for people that are already predisposed to believe this, then this guy comes along who, because of his unbridled ego, just says the lie, says the lie, says the lie, until people believe it. Hitler said, if you scream a lie long enough and loud enough and consistently enough, people will believe it. And it's true. People believe lies all the time. Even, you know, COVID's out of control. It's worse now than it has ever been. And there's other countries that have already, they're already post-COVID. Even in Wuhan, China, where it started, they're down to less than something. The last I heard is like less than 100 infections. Meanwhile, we've got 4,000 people a day dying. And because this one man has it in his mind that to wear a mask is a sign of weakness, and he weaponized masks, you still got people fighting over a piece of cloth and people dying. And at some point you think, well, this is not a political statement. This is a statement about life and death. Do y'all not realize how just believing one man's lies is killing people and could possibly kill more? I mean, you honestly can't see that. And it's kind of like that woman on Dr. Phil. Even when you prove it to them, it's like it's like the whole cult mentality. It's like once people sell themselves out to it, they commit, you know, for Jim Jones, they commit suicide, or that the Hale Bopp. You know, there's all these people that have said a lie till their followers really believed it. You know, I understand the whole thing about influence and charisma. I've taught on that for years. Charles Manson never actually killed anybody. He influenced those young people to do these horrible murders and ruined all of their lives. Most of them are elderly people now who are dying off. They spent all of their lives in prison because of this one man's lies. And even, you know, I know that I have influence, I have charisma. I mean, I understand that, and I try not to ever, ever abuse that, because I know there are people that, you know, if I say something, they're going to believe it's the truth. Which is why, over the years, I have always said, look, I want you to believe what I say, but if I say something really off, if I tell you to get up on the roof and jump off, you know, draw the line there. I mean, I want you to still love me, but y'all need to say we need to pray for him because he lost his mind. I mean, I'll say that again now. If I ever say something to you that could threaten your life, you have my full permission to call me a fraud, call me a liar, call me on it. Yeah, New Zealand. Yeah, you're right, Byron. And, you know, some lies that people believe are harmless. And then there's other lies that you see. You know, I'm looking at the news last night about more footage coming out of people beating cops with American flags just because they believe one man's lies. And lies are seductive. Conspiracy theories are seductive. There's a romantic notion about being on the... Especially if you felt disenfranchised, there's something about the attraction of being on the inside, having some information that nobody else knows, thinking that something like Antifa is real. Antifa is an ideology. It's a word that means anti-fascism. It's not an actual organized group. And It's like, you know, here we are in the 21st century, 21 years into the 21st century, and it's like people are in medieval ages believing things that are just demonstrably false. I mean, it's not like the jury's still out on it. It's like, no, this has been proven over and over and over and over again. You believe a lie. And now there's this whole other aspect to it where all these people in church world who have prophesied, and it's been a lot of them, who have prophesied that Trump was getting a second term no matter what happened, they've added to it, like the prophetic community and the white evangelical church and QAnon and the Klan and the white supremacists and the Proud Boys. They're all melding into the same group of people that are susceptible to the same lie. So now you got all these people that have come out strongly and said, you know, we prophesy that no matter what it looks like, this election will be turned over, and you know, Trump will be put back in office. And now all of these people are losing their, not all of them, but a lot of them are losing their following because, you know, people, you know, paid a lot of money. Donald Trump raised more money in the last few weeks than he has in the last 4 years because he's, you know, when you say, send me this money so we can stop the lie, and you're the liar, there's a, you know, lying is big business. Big business. I mean, I remember back when my church was a mega church, talking to other mega church pastors when they would, you know, it'd be after church and people let their hair down and kind of start telling, being candid. I can't tell you how many famous pastors that if I said the name, you would know them, would say to me, look, Jim, I believe everything you say, you know, what you tell, what you say about hell and not being real and the devil and all that kind of stuff, you're right. But if you take the devil and hell and spiritual warfare away from these people, it's going to ruin you financially. Like basically they're saying, we know none of it's real either, but you have to keep putting that in front of the people. So that's what keeps them coming and giving. And I used to look at these people and think, oh my God, I am not like you. Like you know, when I get up to preach, it's like I've taken a truth serum. I get up and sometimes tell too much. And the fact that I would have people, you know, I'm watching this one guy crunching on his French fries saying, yeah, it's not real, but you know, you got to say it, you know, to keep the money coming in. I thought, I got to get away. You people are dangerous. And even these last 4 years, just seeing the way the evangelical church has embraced lies that have fit their theological ideology, I just think, no, I'm not only not you anymore. I never was you. I never was like that. And I've got my, you know, I'm my own. I'm not all that jazzed about people foretelling the future anyway. This week, if you're interested, go read, I'm not going to get into it now, but if you're interested, go look at Ezekiel chapter 13. It's where God tells Ezekiel to prophesy against the prophets. And he says, go tell the prophets of Israel that they've prophesied out of their own imagination. They've prophesied out of their own hearts. They've said, thus says the Lord, when it's just really what they wanted. It was not what I said. And it's spectacularly pertinent right now. It even talks about how I will destroy their wall and tear down their wall because they have prophesied a falsehood. And, you know, I've never been a big one for... I love the part of prophecy that includes foretelling and forthtelling. I mean, I've had some good experience with people saying that those things to me. And there's some things that I just knew. Like I remember, this would have been 04. I was at my office at night, and I had the TV on. And it's the first time I ever saw Barack Obama, and he was speaking to the, I'd never heard of him before. He was speaking to, the Democratic convention. And I really wasn't even paying that much attention. I was writing something, but my TV was on, and I stopped and listened to his speech because he was, it was unusual to see a black man in his position saying some of the things that he was saying. So it caught my attention. But when I looked up the second time, just as clear as a bell, I heard, I don't remember when I've ever heard anything more clearly. I heard, that man will be the next president. I just heard it. I never told anybody. It's like, that's not what I do. I never get up and prophesy. And I wasn't even sure that I believed it, but I definitely heard that from somewhere beyond my intellect. I thought, oh, he'll be the next president. And I remember I kept working whatever I was working. And like, I don't think I ever mentioned it in my sermons or anything, but I heard that. I'm good with saying something that, like, these are future events, or I like when somebody explains what's happening now, or someone taps into the zeitgeist, if you know what that word means. It means the tenor of what's happening now. Where are the people's minds now? It's a German word. So I like that. Now, I mentioned Rutherford earlier. He's played a role in my life where he's told me about future events. He prophesied about three of my four children being born, and he was accurate on that. And I've known some other people that were accurate, and then I've seen them really miss it. I mean, I did, some of you that had a history with me at Church in the Now, we had a journey for a period of time with Kim Clement, who died a few years ago. And, when Kim would give people personal words, they were astoundingly accurate. Then when he would start prophesying about events in the political world, he would have a tendency to lose me on that. I mean, we never had a falling out over it. It's just like, it's not really what I do. And I remember the last time he and I, we just kind of drifted apart over the years. And I remember the last time I ever saw him, it was back when this is back before they had killed Saddam Hussein, and long before they killed Osama bin Laden. And I saw on TBN, Paul Crouch was interviewing him, and he said, I hear you've got a word. He said, yes, I'm telling you, I've never heard anything more strongly in my spirit, but I'm telling you, this October, and this would have been like in maybe June, he says, I'm absolutely sure that God told me this October, this coming October, they will catch Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And I remember Paul Crouch was like, wow, you're really convinced. He said, no, I'm absolutely sure of it. Well, they didn't get any of them. I think maybe Saddam Hussein was like a year later in October, and then Osama bin Laden was many years later. And I never saw Kim on TBN after that. I don't know what happened, but I remember when he was talking about future events and political things, I thought, I would never rebuke you. That's not what I do, but you're losing me on that. When you start, I can tell you, I'm perceptive. I did not see COVID-19 coming. I was surprised that Trump got elected the first time. I was surprised that he didn't get elected the second time. I was totally surprised by that. And I always vote, but there's a lot of things that I do not know. I did not see, I was looking at, Ken and I were in Times Square, posing with the, they have those ginormous numbers of the new year that they, suspend up above Times Square before they drop the ball. We were in Times Square when they were putting up the second part of 2020. They're letters tall, numbers taller than us. And we're standing there with the 20, and I looked at it the other day and I thought, you suckers had no idea what was coming up in 2020. Back then we're like, 2020 is going to be the most awesome year. Like, who knew what was on the horizon? I didn't see those things coming. I didn't see, 9/11 coming. There's a lot of things that totally surprised me. So, there's some things I think I have an idea of future events, but I don't when you start getting too specific about who's going to get elected and what's going to happen, I'm not saying you're a false prophet. I'm just saying that's just not my thing. Now, there are other people that I am friends with. Like, I don't know if Doug Wentz is on today, but he's a friend of mine. And Doug has a very unusual prophetic gift, an ability to not talk about specific things that are coming up, but to sort of go into the future and talk about these are things that will happen. Now, when that kind of thing, I'm totally into. Like, yeah, just don't put a time and a date on it because it makes people susceptible to believe lies. But if you're saying these are things that are going to help you, like in Hebrews, it says, taste the world. What is it? Who have tasted things of the world to come. I like that kind of thing. There's different teachers I like for different reasons. I think they fulfill a very important niche. Doug is a very strong prophetic voice. There's other teachers I like for different reasons because I think what they say is very important. I've never met Kay Fairchild, but I'm friends with her on Facebook. I think that a lot of what she says to kind of connect people who've traditionally thought about the cross with maybe understanding Christianity from a better trend, a better perspective. I think that's very important. I think people who have those kind of roles to play, Barbara Simons, a lot of these people, some of them I've never met, but I like the things they say. I think they're prophetic about where we are moving without being ultra specific about dates and times. And you know, it's good to know about the future. Like even in the Old Testament, it talks about different tribes of Israel, and it says one thing, it talks about the sons of Issachar who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. But when I look at the church world at large now, I think, y'all don't have understanding of the times. You don't know what's going on at all. I'm just kind of standing on that Ezekiel 13 piece. Like, you know, it's time to call it for what it is. And when people are just prophesying lies, even if their intention maybe is not totally dark, it needs to be called. I mean, people can't keep believing things. They can't just keep selling things because they think Jesus is about to come back. And, you know, it's happened. If you look at the history of people who have been taken for a ride in the last 2,000 years, who sold houses and, you know, gone out on hillsides and waited for an event. That's why, you know, when you talk about the second coming of Jesus being an event, you know, you're in a different space than I don't think it's an event. I think it's a mindset. I think we're the second coming of Christ. When you start pinpointing it as an event, I think that's not the way Eastern thought was. And I know the birth of Jesus was prophesied, the flood was prophesied. There were events that happened that prophets of old did prophesy. But they didn't necessarily put dates on it. The Magi that came to see the Christ child, they weren't going on biblical prophecy. They had charted the zodiac. So there are things that people who are awakened know about the times we're living in. Even, my cousin, LaDonna Diaz, she's said some things recently that I think, wow, you're really very much in touch with where we are right now. And so I think those kind of prophetic voices are important. When you start having people prophesying to you, prophesying/lying to you, you need to call it. There's a reason why Paul said prophecy has to be judged. And I know that some people thought it was sort of harsh that I said this, and I lost a lot of Facebook friends over it, but I just really believe it. I'm not trying to be funny. I think if you're in a church that's prophesying to you that Donald Trump's still going to, you know, somehow in these next 3 days take back the White House, you're in a cult. I mean, you're under the leadership of somebody that's lying to you. And if somebody's lying to you and it's harmless, then I'd say, all right, fine, y'all believe whatever you want to believe. Believe in Santa Claus and the unicorn and, you know, the Tooth Fairy and Antifa and all that kind of stuff. But when it starts affecting how people live and die, then I think, no, somebody needs to say something about that. And that's why, at this point, I'm not even defending it. I'm not explaining it. I'm just like, no, I need to say something, or otherwise my quietness on this is complicity. God did not put any person in office, including Joe Biden. They're just elections. And when you on one sense, everything is spiritual, but in another sense, when you over-spiritualize everything, you set yourself up for, you know, believing lies. How do I bring it to you personally? Just because somebody said something to you about you that was negative doesn't mean it's true. And there's some people that you're just never going to convince otherwise. I remember when I was still in Conyers, I'd gone to my chiropractor at one time was one of our care pastors, and I was in his clinic. I was on one. He had a lot of these really cool machines that could stretch you and do all this kind of stuff. And so sometimes you'd be in a room with other people getting treatment. So one day I was on one of his contraptions, which helped me a lot. I mean, they were great. But this woman was next to me, and she said, "Are you Bishop Swilly?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Can I ask you, is it true that I hear that every Sunday you pass out bulletins in your church, and that each one has a condom in it?" I just can't believe that you would do that. I said, "Excuse me?" I said, "That's not true. I've never given anybody a condom in my life, and we don't even have bulletins." And she said, "Well, no, I heard it. My best friends, their son went to your youth group, and he was given a condom by your youth pastor." I said, "No, he wasn't." I even called my youth pastor. I said, "This is what this woman's saying. I won't tell you what he said. It would not be repeatable." Suffice it to say, that never happened. And what was interesting is, you know, when I lived in Conyers, there was just like a spell over the people believing just crazy stuff that they had heard about the church. But usually when I would meet them and they would ask me things like, "Is it true you lock everybody in the building so that they can't get out until they give them the offering?" I mean, I heard stuff like that regularly. "Is it true you handle snakes? I've never heard that in Atlanta. I just always heard it in Conyers. But usually when I would meet somebody personally, they would say, "Oh, thank God, I'm so glad to meet you and finally put this lie to rest. Because I see you and your family around town. I think that can't be true." But this woman, even when I said, "Ma'am, I'm telling you, that's never, ever happened. I've never even referred to condom use in my teaching. This is the first time I've ever used the word in teaching that I can remember." And she was like that woman on Dr. Phil, or the people tearing up the Capitol last week. She was like, "Well, no, it's true. He's a good Christian boy, and he wouldn't have lied." I said, "Ma'am, your friend's son may have had a condom, and he didn't get it in my church or my youth group. I mean, he could have gotten that anywhere, but that's just not true. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you." She said, "Nope, they wouldn't lie to me. I'm sure it's true. And I just think it's terrible that you do that." And I thought, you know, there's some people that aren't that far removed from, you know, like some of these primitive areas when the missionary would go in and, you know, light a cigarette lighter and the people would go, you know, because they thought it was the fire god. I thought, well, you know, I'm dealing with people that are at that level of intellect. And at a certain point, you understand why Paul just said, you know what, just let him who is ignorant be ignorant still. There's some people that just, they're so comfortable with a lie serves their purpose so much that they just stay with it, even when you prove to them that what they believe is absolutely not true, unquestionably not true. All I can say to you is just don't be afraid of truth. Truth is good. Truth is wonderful. Truth doesn't always make your life better, but it makes your easier, but it always makes your life better. It's better just to, it's so much better to tell the truth. It's so much better to live the truth. And as I'm saying this right now, I pray that the Spirit of God will reveal to you things that you have believed about yourself that are a lie. And if they are a lie, just disconnect from them and start changing the chemistry in your brain to where you can embrace the truth. We really have to stop the nonsense now. I mean, it's enough. And there's still people that are threatening more violence in the next 3 days, all based on the lies of one man. It has to stop. It's the insanity that comes from lying has to stop. I don't even feel like I have to say if that angers you. I believe you hear what I'm saying. I think if you've watched this far, you're intelligent enough to know that even if there's something you've believed that you know is just now is not true, that you'll disconnect from it and believe the truth. I speak healing over this country, especially in these next 3 days. I don't want to see any more killing or bloodshed. I pray that the lie not just be exposed, but that people would stop being seduced by the lie and by the lies. Spirit of God, let your truth march on. Your truth is marching on, the actual truth. I pray that everybody listening to me right now will embrace truth in their own life. I speak healing over this country that I love so much, and I speak healing over you and wellness and strength and blessing. I guess that's all. Sorry about the loud, crazy noise. Yes, I pray that everyone is safe too. Bam, absolutely. Let's set ourselves in agreement. I don't know. I might even do a live thing Wednesday night. We'll see. If you want to send support, I'll put up the links. Thank you for those of you that have continued to do that. I don't know. I don't have any word about when we're going to be back in the theater. I just don't know. I'm very strangely content right now with the way things are. I mean, I really am. I'm at peace with everything. I'm at peace with my life. I'm at peace with my journey. I'm at peace with my ministry. I'm at peace with all. I'm at peace with living the truth. And the more you live in truth, the more you see lies for what they are. And so I pray that you live in the truth as well. Can't wait to read your comments. Love you. Peace.